Looking good, Lewis.
Feeling yep, good, yep. Lewis. Nice to see you, Nick.
I didn't have my San Francisco Giants hat.
No worries. No worries. I won't hold it against you this time.
We got to start wearing black and orange. Art.
All right, everyone. I've got a pretty amazing episode of the show today because I'm just going to give a little bit of backstory and you'll understand why I feel like I need to add some context to this conversation, because I can only imagine this is going to be probably one of the better, if not the best episode we've done on this show. And most of you know that we do the Sneaker History Podcast. These guys were on with Mike recently. I wasn't able to join, but I wanted to talk to them because I have such a close connection to what they've done. And it goes back for me all the way back into the basically 1980s, where me and my siblings were obsessed with sportswear and sneakers and getting these East Bay catalogs in the mail. So much so that the four of us, I have two brothers and a sister, the four of us, at one point, we got into so many arguments over who could circle what shoe and who was going to eventually buy what shoe that all of us had our own individual catalogs coming to the mailbox. But at one point, my mom got so upset with us fighting over whose catalog was whose that we had a fifth free catalog that sat and roamed from, you know, the living room and the bathroom and all the places that our personal catalogs ended up. So I feel like this is a really cool full circle moment for me to have a conversation with Rick and Art, the gentleman that started East Bay and really kind of shaped what sneaker history and sportswear and all of these things that we love about this stuff. You know, they really set the tone for us that came along. And, you know, like, and I was lucky enough to be a part of building the East Bay blog when it first started, you know, kind of after that journey. But I'm so excited to talk to you guys about this because it's been such a poignant part of my, not only just my career journey, but like my personal life and, you know, relationships for, you know, we're going on 40 something years of it for me personally and even longer for you guys. So welcome to the show. I'm super excited to talk to you and, you know, how you guys doing?
Really, well, after really that well, introduction, Nick,
thanks.
I gotta fan off a little bit here. Get starting to perspire.
That's a lot to live up to.
I'm sure you guys have no problem. You know, you've been doing the rounds. I want to get the business part kind of out of the way because I know you got some great stories that we were already talking about. But bookofeastbay.com, people can get the new book and kind of hear the journey that you went on from a little town that I used to visit regularly. I don't know, Rick, if you're in Wausau right now, but you look like you're somewhere close.
And up north where we live in the summer. That's why nice, it took nice. So long to get here. Nothing gets, you thought Wausau was hard to get into. This is even twice as hard.
Yeah. So I guess like there's a bunch of lore around the catalogs. You've had a lot of conversations to talk about the new book, which I'm excited to. I was telling Charles I ordered mine. It just didn't show up yet. So hopefully I'll get it in the next day or two. But one thing that I think is really interesting that most people probably don't know about, and I would love to talk a little bit more maybe about the business side of this, was kind of the relationship that you had with Nike when, you know, you were almost too successful for them. You kind of threatened Nike by being so successful, right? And they pulled your account or kind of put a pause on things. What was that like? And what were you guys thinking in those moments where it's like, I would imagine that Nike was a huge part of your success in you know, product line at that time.
Well, that was 1980, end of 87. If you read the book, some men in suits show up at our old store. And obviously people we didn't know. So, and
overdressed.
Nike, yes. So, you know, mail order was, and catalog really didn't exist. It certainly didn't exist to young people, young athletes. So Nike certainly had to try, they were trying to get a handle on it. What mail order was. Unfortunately, that was us too. And So we lost 40% of our business overnight with the Nike Air product. We still had the other Nikes, and we decided wisely not to burn that bridge. And it took a long time to get them back, which we finally did, which you were talking about Shaq earlier when we were off the air.
Yeah.
He was instrumental in that. But when we did get Nike back, and this was 5 years later, we were the only mail order catalog to have it. So we had the exclusive then.
That's awesome.
So sometimes patient pays off.
Yeah.
You know, Art and I have said many times, we really felt we've never worked a day in our lives, except for probably the first.
I know you did.
I know I didn't. Yeah. I'm coming up front. I'm being honest. First time ever. But the first month was really tough for us, because it was a pretty hard blow. 40% after we just went full nationwide. So the catalog was, we finally brought catalog production in-house, so we had a little bit more control. Finally decided, like we said, to go nationwide, and we're getting really good responses from the coasts, who were the last, East Coast and West Coast, which were the last two parts of the country, because we wanted to make sure we had inventory, and there's a fair amount of people that live on the East Coast and the West Coast compared to Nebraska and Oklahoma and everything else. So it was quite a blow. In fact, Art and I even stopped seeing each other socially as often, just to get a little break and get away and not have to talk about it the whole time. So
yeah. Plus that we had five young kids at that time too, all under probably 5 years old. So
yeah.
Between one
of those beautiful moments where everything in life seems so chaotic. And then when you get through it, it turns out to be, you know, probably for the best, because you probably had a closer relationship with Nike after that point. Going
we
forward,
we did.
Do you guys remember?
Sorry,
go ahead.
Well, no, that was just one of the things that we maybe didn't do as well as we should have, and that is build the relationship with our vendors and let them, because as Art said, the catalog business or mail order back then is what it was called, was brand new. Nobody else was doing it, and so why did we expect that they would just let us go untouched? Without really understanding it, and we didn't do a very good job of explaining it either. So,
yeah, I think there's probably a similar experiences even with, like, you know, the internet and, like, you know, like the way that things progressed into apps on the phones, and like we almost kind of have these moments in society where we have these, like, well, this is uncharted territory for everyone, but. You know, you guys are kind of the innovators to say, like, hey, we're going to try this and see if it works and make it work locally and expand. How did you, I guess, like, from a leadership perspective, how did you communicate those challenges with the team? You know, one of the things that I loved about going up to East Bay when I was working with, you know, the team up there to build the blog and create all the content for the kind of bringing the catalogs to the digital space was just how community oriented Wausau is. It's such a small place. So the running joke, and you guys probably have similar ones, but at that time, the running joke with the people I was working with was like, well, you either work for East Bay or you work for the UPS store, UPS location, because they're the ones shipping the East Bay products, you know? But like that's got to be even more challenging for a smaller, you know, location like that in a small town where so much, you know, you guys probably felt the pressure of you know, so many people depending on you even.
Well, Wausau always had a huge athletic reputation. And so we were fortunate in Wausau that we had a whole lot of good athletes to pull from to fill spaces and to fill jobs. The downside of that is, as we grew, there wasn't enough. So you went from the feeling really good about it until it really started scaling. And then you realize, I think Dick Johnson, who became CEO, I think at one time in the mid, early 20s, late teens, they had 60 jobs they were looking to fill and couldn't find anybody to fill them.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of lucked into being able to work on building the blog and telling all those stories and going through the old catalogs and bringing them to the internet, because I worked for Soul Collector at that time, the magazine, you know, but we, yep. you know, had put together a contract with East Bay to say, hey, we want to help you, you know, help you have this space on the internet that like feels authentic to the sneaker community. But the main reason that I got to be the project manager of that was because nobody else wanted to go up to Wausau in the cold. So I was like, hey, I'm going to go up there and meet everyone and go hang out. And, you know, like it was fun for me. It was, I figured I'd get to dig through some old catalogs and hear a bunch of crazy stories. And I was like, I'm in, but everybody else is like, are you sure it's cold up there?
So the only ones from Soul Collector were you and Steve Mulholland that made the trek, huh?
Yeah, so Steve Mulholland, Jordan Hagedorn was working on the East Bay side at that time, and then Nick DiPaolo was working with Soul Collector at that time. I think he went up there a couple of times over the, you know, it was probably a 3 to 4 year window of making all that happen and you know, kind of launching it and stuff. So
they probably offered you a job too.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I ended up helping with like catalog stuff after the fact, even because, you know, they needed, you know, more writing and more, you know, content to fill in all the gaps. And, but it was great. You know, like I mentioned, you know, like Sean Cummings was kind of the head of partnership that we were working on at that time. And then Dave Lokes was involved at that time. I never got to meet Dick Johnson. Hopefully someday I'll get to have a conversation with him, but, you know, it was like taking my enthusiast side of the world and getting to understand, you know, this big corporate, by that time, you know, a big corporate, you know, entity. And it's kind of the space that I landed in my career is that too. So it's really kind of set me up for a lot of success by being able to kind of be a part of both of those worlds where I'm nerding out on a, you know, about sneakers on a crazy level. But also like, hey, we can make this into, you know, stories and interviews and blogs and, you know, podcasts and all the stuff that I still do to this day. So, yeah, it was such a fun time. But, I would imagine, you know, and I thought about it going up there, you know, there's so many sports connections through East Bay. And I think, you know, for me, like I think about like I want to say you guys might have talked about this. But kind of going back to the Shaq conversation and, you know, him being someone who ordered from East Bay because you carried all those sizes, like it was kind of, you know, I don't wear a size 22, but like I wore a size 13 when I was, you know, from, you know, basically sixth grade on up. So East Bay was always the place I got it because you had them available, you know, like the stores even back then didn't carry as many of that size. It was, you know, if I wasn't buying the stuff at full price because I was like, you know, it was not something my folks could afford. But that also, I feel like basketball is one side of it and it's great for the sneakers. But I also heard some stories about you guys helping out athletes like Roger Clemens and, you know, going up to East Bay, saw you guys have got gold gloves in the, you know, had gold gloves and all sorts of soccer gear in the, you know, headquarters up there at the time. So how did that all come together with sport? Because and what are some of the people that kind of, I don't know, maybe made you guys feel like, wow, this is working much better than we anticipated?
Well, and I think just as an example, I think you fit him up, Art, but Blaze Winter, who used to play defensive line for the Packers and then moved on to the Chargers. Yeah. He drove over from Green Bay to buy a size 14 track spike so he could do his speed workouts because he thought he needed a lighter shoe. He didn't want a training shoe. He didn't want all the support and cushioning. He wanted to feel fast, and he drove over and bought a spike so he could work on his speed because he was a really immensely strong man. And that was one of the things that the coaches said that would really help him propel his career. So he made the effort to drive on over and buy a pair of sprinter spikes.
That's amazing.
And I remember being impressed by Blaze that I don't think he could hear. And so he always went, you know, he had to look to see where the snap count was. He was a defensive tackle. So
Yeah, and those types of things like are so like those are the things that I love hearing about because, you know, there's so many people that he influenced and impacted in his career that I'm normally never going to talk about someone like that talking about sneakers, right? But that's such a great story, you know. Another one that I think is interesting that has probably been talked about, I think he talked about it in his biography that he wrote, but Kevin Plank and Under Armour, you guys were kind of like the first, you know, the first big yes that he got, right? I think you kind of kicked off a whole, you know, I mean, admittedly, I still have East Bay kind of you at the end of East Bay, there was sportswear that they were making. And I still have a bunch of that stuff that I run in and go to the gym in. So
it never
talk
wears
about
out.
How that came about.
Well, Kevin made us tried to make us look too good. We were old, just running shorts and T-shirt kind of guys. And Kevin comes along with this. I mean, Nike came out with something, too. So it was really, in fact, most of the brands came out with something, but they didn't go into the depth that Kevin did. And it was nice that Kevin brought a whole new flavor to it because it was great competition for all the other brands. And one of the things that I think Art and I have talked about so often is that we really didn't try to push one brand over the other. It was more important for us to have the customer have the power and let them see everything that's out there and then let the hype and let the marketing and let the emotions and let the feel of brand new shoes rush over that person and let them pick whatever shoes they wanted to. It was our job to make sure that they got access and that we offered selection to do it. And so it really, as you said, like you were a size 13 when at such a young age. And it just having the inventory was critical for us because we would hate to have you call and not have something. And so that's why we grew at such a slow pace. And doing the, you know, dividing the country up into sections and growing slowly because having inventory when somebody called was just super important to us. Build that trust.
Kevin Plank.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think on the other side of that, I know like when I first got up there, you know, this is probably, I don't know, 15 or 20 years ago, at least at this point, the storage of that product in such a small town like Wausau, I was like, these facilities that all the product is in, that all the work is being done and everything's being, you know, shipped. And it was so like awe-inspiring and overwhelming all at the same time to see so much in one. You know, and nowadays we have the Amazon warehouses seem to pop up in every neighborhood. But like back then, for you guys, that had to have been quite a jump and quite an experience to even say, hey, we're going to go, even as you scaled slowly, how big it got. You know, what was that like when you first kind of started to see, okay, well, we're going from, you know, a store to a small warehouse to a big warehouse to a much bigger warehouse to, like I said, you know, UPS is your main partner in town and they're the only, you know, kind of massive employer down the street. But it's on you guys to have brought that all to Wausau even.
Well, I feel so bad you didn't get the book because we talk in the book how proud we were to see all these shoes stacked up in Rick's mom's basement when we started out. And then we always felt working with young athletes and that was, we were coaches and that we had to get the shoes out quick. We always got them out that day before 3 o'clock. We'd start out of Rick's basement. Then we had a store. Then we had a big underground kind of storage place underneath that. That was a car dealership at one time. Then we had 7 around town, and people would be flying around trying to find this or find that. You know, we had different, you know, obviously if you had the Air Jordans hit, you made sure that was right up front somewhere. And then eventually we consolidated into that large warehouse. So that was, it was amazing how fast we were at it considering the obstacles we had. But I think everyone enjoyed it. We had a great team.
Yeah, it seems like you guys had a lot of fun.
Yes. Yeah, and in the one of our main warehouses, we would stash a squirt gun, so in case anything happened at a moment's notice, we were ready to go.
I love that.
Well, and it was always so hard to hide them because we weren't in the warehouses every day, and these people were, so they knew all the little crooks and crannies. So it took. In fact, we were going to hire a vice president of camouflage, but we just never got around to it. But trying to hide your squirt gun so no one else would know where it is. Thank goodness the size 12 shoes came, because you could fit two squirt guns in a size pair of size 12 box. And yeah,
I can imagine somebody got a pair of shoes that
there's
ours. A squirt gun in it with it. So we were hiding them.
I really hope somebody watches this or listens to this and says, oh, I got a pair of shoes with a squirt gun in it one time from my East Bay order. And if you're listening or watching and that happened to you, definitely let us know, because that is a great story and we need to hear the rest of it. I want to know what shoe it landed in.
Yeah.
Oh, well,
so talk about the blog. Talk about the blog you started, if you would please, and help us understand maybe why it didn't go farther than it did. What did you learn? What did you run into along the way that ended it?
Well, so I think it was, you know, the blog was always successful with, you know, it continued on well beyond my work. Yep. with them and with the blog itself. But at the time that we put it together, you know, it was definitely not something that was normal. You know, like there wasn't a comfort level with it. Like we were coming from an editorial side on Soul Collector. You know, we're doing print magazines, we're doing a blog, and we just were seeing so much engagement from the internet kind of becoming the normal talking space for sneakers at that time, that, you know, East Bay was kind of like the perfect partner, because there was, you know, there was the new product, obviously, that you're selling as East Bay in, you know, 2008 or 9 or 10 or somewhere around there is when we did this. But then there's the nostalgia of the catalog. So, you know, like we could go, you know, when I was up there, we would go through and like I would be flipping through old catalogs and thinking, okay, well, how can I scan this in? You know, we didn't even have really good cameras on our phones back then. Like, it was like, I don't even remember if I had I don't think I had an iPhone or anything. I think this is like BlackBerry for me or something, you know? So, it was such a, you know, kind of new, and the content like doesn't churn the way it does now. So we had to be selective about what we asked for. We had to, you know, like even, you know, looking at like the way we shot photos for the magazine, we wanted to have some sort of connection to East Bay in the styles that we chose to go for the stories, right? So if we could get an interview and, you know, an athlete was with, you know, Adidas, then we would want to have like our kind of signature magazine right. look on our site, and also have Adidas's or East Bay's signature look. And that was really challenging for, you know, a number of reasons, just because, you know, a lot of times I remember we had one particular instance where the Air Jordan 11 with the gray was coming back out. The cool gray yep. Jordan yep. 11 was yep. coming back
Pet
out.
Leather. Yep.
Yeah. And, you know, and you guys, I'd love to hear about your guys' experiences with this, but like a lot of people that don't work in the business don't realize how early those samples come in. So we had these beautiful photos taken of the samples, and then Nike changed the shoe by the time it came out. So we couldn't really use all this imagery that we had created, because by the time the shoe was going to be released and in the catalog and, you know, and even on the website at that time, you know, it looked completely different. It was different material and everything. So those were some of the things that we kind of consistently ran into, I think, where we would get a bunch of stuff. We would try to plan it out as far as possible. But, you know, when it's the internet is moving at such a faster pace, And then the catalog and the processing of like product moves at a completely different pace. We just had challenges aligning those things. And I think for me, I always thought, well, we can always, you know, like the funnest part about it for me was I got to write about all the sports that I loved. You know, I wrote about, you know, Bryce Harper in high school, you know, Steven Strasburg for the Nationals, you know, like those types of things were like really like what I loved about it.
Buster Posey.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, like these are guys that I just absolutely, you know, I got chills thinking about getting to do that. Cause as a kid, I always thought, wow, sports writer, or, you know, like, and sneakers is adjacent to that, but like, it's the sports that always really gets me going. So it was really challenging to kind of, you know, turn that into a commercialized thing, right? Like if I'm writing about Buster Posey in college or him getting drafted, you know, how do we connect that to a product that's in the East Bay catalog, not knowing where he's going to land,
right,
in regards to product, you know?
Yeah, well, for sure. Yeah.
So that was kind of the interesting part of it for me. But like, you know, I'm sure you ran into very similar things just in the process of getting, you know, things for the catalog and making sure you had the actual product and the, you know, the right product and the versus the samples and all of that stuff. So what were some of the challenges that you guys, you know, kind of dealt with in that earlier era?
Rick did a great job digitalizing catalog making, when making a catalog so that we could, you know, you talk about, you know, your phones, your camera. We had bought invested $100,000 at the time into a digital camera, probably 1990, 89, somewhere in there. And yeah, it couldn't take a picture as good as your phone right now, or as good as your iWatch. Yeah. So it was like nothing. But so Rick did a great job of, when we first started, we could only put out maybe three catalogs a year, maybe four. And after we got everything, all the technology in place, which didn't exist. I mean, there wasn't any how-to books. Thanks, Rick. Good job. We could put out one a month, one every 3 weeks. And one of the things you talked about when we talked to Nike later and we got them back, I think Mr. Knight was always amazed that we could, you know, he'd say like, how do you get these catalogs out so fast? And, you know, that type of thing. He said it would take us 6 months to do this. So with all the hoops they had to go through.
You know, and that was one of our inflection points for us, is that if you put out a catalog every quarter, early on, you didn't miss a lot of product because the companies weren't dropping stuff as fast as they are now, or even as fast as they got to, even in the 80s and or the late 80s, but the 90s, while we were still there. Once we brought the production in-house, it enabled us to put something out every month. So you get to talk to Nick Engvall, even though he didn't order like he should have, but
and he got five catalogs at his house.
Yeah,
I probably did cost you guys a lot with all those catalogs, huh?
but you got to talk to Nick every month, and each catalog was designed completely different. Back then, the catalog companies who were really quite popular, they would put out a catalog in January, and they would have winter jackets leading off, and then they'd have shorts in the back, and everything else. When they would put out their March catalog, they would just move those jackets from the front to the back, and the shorts in the back to the front. We designed every catalog from scratch, so it had a specific feel, it had a specific look to it, and we always had new product in it. But once you can start pumping out catalogs at that kind of rate, you really can spend time, like you with the blog or the stories that we put in the catalog, you can start hopefully creating a relationship, and you learn something, we learn something by seeing what you do and what you ask for and how you talk to us. But hopefully you got to see all the product when it dropped, because we always had new product in every catalog. So that was one of our inflection points, was being able to put out catalogs so quickly that you really could have a dialogue going almost.
Do you remember like that, the decision to kind of commit to doing more catalogs like that? Do you remember when that happened and like how that worked for the whole team?
it really evolved. And Rick, I'm going to let you talk in this for a second, but it really evolved when we started. I got one here. We were really just a team dealer, 85, 86. And then suddenly by 86 and that, you know, we had suddenly got hundreds and hundreds of thousands of young athletes calling in for a catalog. I mean, that in, I think, late 86, 87, we had to say, please don't call in for a catalog. Just write in, because we weren't sure what was going on. It was like a movement of some sort. And luckily we were at the tsunami. And that's where I think Rick really decided we're going to make this catalog less a team dealer and more aimed at young athletes completely.
Yeah, because back then oh, absolutely. I think you're right on. It made such a difference. And it, because we had put so much effort and time into building the inventory, because like we said before, we didn't want to not have a product when somebody called, because one, what parent's going to let a kid call up and order something on the phone and then have the place say, and give them the credit card at the same time and the address, so Nick could come over to their house one night or something to interview him. But we were trying to build that trust. And so we were building that trust through having the inventory when you called. It was just so important that once we got to inventory to a certain point, then we said, well, now let's put a little money into the catalogs. Cause it was a big nut to crack, like Art said.
And a little,
and you know, had it not worked, just like the Air Jordan, our first Air Jordan buy, had that not worked, you probably would have been out of business. So we were lucky because it was the best job in the world and it was fast paced, and it was a risk every day because you were either you made more catalogs or you bought more Air Jordans or whatever, and you had to pick and choose which one it was. And based upon the time of year and you know how shoes were coming out. But even the first Air Jordans, the first year that they came out in team colors. And it was only 1 year, and Nike learned that the Air Jordan maybe wasn't a team color kind of shoe like the Air Force, and it was more of an individual shoe. And they started focusing in on one or two colors coming out per year, and that was it. But the first Air Jordan, the first year that it was made public, it came out in white and green, white and purple, white and maroon. And we only had leather swatches. We didn't even have samples of the shoes. So you talk about sometimes the shoes, by the time you get them in, are wrong. They just gave us leather. And the one that Art held up, I think, is that the one that it's in? Is that the catalog it's in? Or the coaches thing?
No, I think there's one before that.
Oh, yeah. But so it was just a leather swatch across the top of a bleacher. A row of bleachers with the main inline, the red, black, and red, and the black and red, black and blue down below it. But yeah, you're ordering stuff that you don't even see the shoe sometimes, and you just hope it comes in close to what we pictured.
Yeah, wow, it's so crazy to think about that nowadays. It's changed so much over the years that I can't imagine that there's anybody that's even. You know, you're almost like not buying product without an actual sample or very close to production, if that, you know, unless it's obviously a shoe like the Air Jordan has the clout to carry its weight no matter what it comes in, and people just want to get it. But
even starter jackets, the starter reps, because we got all the samples somehow, but we're assuming they only made one because the reps all around the country used our catalog as their catalog, because even the starter catalog piece didn't have all the samples. And so a lot of the reps used our catalog, so you could go to Pennsylvania or, you know, wherever. Even a team as lowly as the San Francisco Giants, you know, you couldn't see what their jacket looked like because the rep out there didn't have it. So you used our catalog to...
So Santa Clara banana slugs, always a good.
There you go.
Well, actually, now that you say that about the starter jackets, I've got a funny story about that, because I did get a, so I never got the teams that I wanted until I was in a, kind of like sneakers, you know, as a kid, it's like your parents are like, you're not going to spend that much money on a jacket that you're going to go you know, ruining the snow and skateboard and basket, you know, like all of that. And I understand that now. At the time, I was like, I thought my parents just didn't care, you know, like we needed this cool starter jacket and these cool sneakers. But my mom bought it for me, a Jacksonville Jaguars starter jacket, first time they became available. And interestingly enough, and I don't know if this might be right after you guys moved on from the company, but no, I guess it's probably mid-90s when they came around. So
yep,
you're still there, I think, right?
Yep.
Well, the jacket that I saved it, I should have got it. It's in the garage in a you know, box, but it was the original Jaguars logo. And before the team came about, they got sued by Jaguar the car because they used the same shape of Jaguar. So I have the original car-shaped Jaguars logo, you know, it's just one of those crazy stories. I didn't even think about it until, you know, talking to you guys, but that was such a poignant memory for me. Cause I was like, oh, I got this cool thing, but everybody wanted the new stuff. You know, the newer logo was cooler by the time the team got, you know,
that's a collector item going there.
Hey, but that's such an interesting part of like all of this kind of stuff is like, there's so many, you know, kind of personal stories when you think of it's these mass produced items, but we have these like just so poignant personal stories connecting to one little thing in your catalog that now is like the thing that I pass along to my nephews or whatever that is, you know?
Well, and we were so lucky and we hope selfishly plugging the book, but one of the things we were learning as we were growing up, but so was Nike, so was Starter, so were all the companies, because they started, this was the beginning. There were so many firsts in the 80s and early 90s that you can't replicate anymore. You'll see a lot of changes in product that have evolved from the foundation of those very first years. Even just in how companies operate.
We had a front row. Oh, sorry, Rick.
No, yeah, go ahead.
But we were fortunate. We had a front row seat to the takeoff of the sneaker industry. Athletic footwear, you've had a front row seat with all the things you've done to the explosion of it, quite frankly.
Yeah.
So it's kind of cool. But I mean, yeah, things we did, a lot of firsts come out.
Yeah. Well, so one thing that you mentioned, you know, about the kind of the growth and, you know, having to shut down the phone lines. Admittedly, I probably cost you a bunch of money calling and asking questions too, so I apologize for that now. But how did you guys equip the team with the knowledge? Because I have to say, like, when I was, you know, in my teens and early 20s, the East Bay call center people had so much knowledge about this stuff. And, like, that was just, it was like, if I think part of what doesn't get talked about enough for the sneakerhead kind of world is that we all kind of connected when the internet came around and that's helped blow it up. But I can't be the only one that called East Bay asking questions about shoes and colors and what athletes were wearing what. But it seemed like in my memory, and maybe I'm just, you know, glorifying it now and in the past, but it seemed like every time I called, that everyone that I talked to was super knowledgeable about that stuff. And that had to have been a big challenge if you were getting that many calls from athletes.
Well, have you been to the post office where you see those wanted posters? Your picture was up on the wall in our call centers. So when you would call in, can we put you on hold, Nick? Oh, Nick, be right, but we'll put you on hold. No, I just kidding. But
oh man, that's why I was always put on hold.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. I think the record was 27 people they passed you around to one time. They were keeping track of that. But it was that, you know, we were all building a foundation, and there were so many pieces that go into it, and it was just fun to be a part of that. You know, you talk about the blog, and that's one of the reasons that we were feeling good about selling the business, because the team that was there, the creativity was still there, the passion for having yeah. product for athletes, yeah. the passion for in teaching, you know, because when that's one of the reasons why we went into business is because you couldn't find anybody in the shoe stores because you were selling some most of the shoe stores we grew up in was a sporting goods store. So you had rifles and you had canoes and you had tents. Oh, and then you had a couple of athletic shoes or you had a dress shoe store. So they had to worry about high heels and penny loafers and hiking boots while they're still trying to sell you the Air Jordan basketball shoe. So we really worked yep. hard at building that trust by trying to figure out. And as we grew, we got to work with our software company and they got to design in screens that allowed us to put as much information as we could about each product that was in the store. And tell them about Jim Sisco.
So Jim, we had a group of people, and Jim Sisco was a size 8.5, which is the size you want. So and we had some ladies that were a size 7, and you know, they'd try on every shoe to say, okay, this one, you know, if you wear Adidas, you're going to wear a 9 in this Nike, and they had all that. The other thing we did, you know, we really kind of, everything we did there was pretty much building the plane as you were flying along. So Rick and Jim Guerin and some guy, they developed all this software part of it with all the information on that. And then twice a year, we would rent out the bottom floor of a hotel in a big center and everything. And we would do in our lower times, not so busy times, we'd have everybody who worked on the phones come in and we'd teach them all about everything everybody knew. So we'd have, and they'd go from basically classroom to classroom. And that's how we try to keep everybody up as much as possible.
It was a big deal to us. So cool. It was important.
And I think it was such a, I mean, it just was such a poignant thing to me as, you know, as a teenager to have access to not only just the product and the information and stuff, but like, you know, I remember the athletes showing up in the catalogs and, you know, like, obviously there was licensing conversations around a lot of that stuff because you had to do the, you know, block out the Giants logo if you got, you know, Will Clark or something back then. But how did you guys kind of navigate that aspect of it with the you know, the, I guess the ramping up of the catalogs, because you talked about the catalogs going from like a, you know, like a quarterly kind of thing or a, you know, twice a year, but then you're trying to teach people twice a year. And then you're trying to, you know, you've got, you know, squirt gun fights distracting you from all of that. Like, I mean, I think like, I personally got to experience a lot of the energy that you guys created, even though you were removed from the company and gone and had moved on at that point. But like, you know, you probably would agree with me. Wausau is such a beautiful community of people, you know, like part of what the sports aspect of it for me that drew me in once I got up there and started getting to know people, it's like, you know, we're doing all this work, but we're also going to go, you know, get some cheese curds, have a beer and watch whatever game is on that night. Almost every time I'm there, like that is just par for the course. But that's what, to your point about like having such a good group of people to carry the torch, you know, it felt like, I don't know if it was just, you know, salt of the earth, good natured people that you had involved from the beginning, or it feels like you guys just had something that was much bigger than the rest of, you know, kind of what corporate America feels like to a lot of young people now.
Well, I think we were always good at listening to the customers because that drove demand and it gave us some insight into things that maybe other retailers wouldn't have or wouldn't think about. And listening became part of what we did with the people that work with us. Anybody, I mean, what were we, Art? 30 million before we even had job descriptions?
35.
You know, we didn't have job descriptions, and everybody kind of did a little bit of everything. So when it was really busy, everyone got on the phones. When we were backlogged because of a new software update, everybody helped in shipping. And so it was... we both of us tried really hard. And then as we built the management team did the same thing. Everybody, we hope, because that was our goal, everybody felt listened to. And everybody felt that they, if they had an idea and we were doing something wrong in the catalog or not effective or not efficient, they can come forward and say, let's do it this way because it's so much faster or easier, whatever. And so we were just like you did with the blog and being creative and maybe being a little bit ahead of your time. We were constantly looking at how do we get better? It became a culture. I think it really boiled down to part of the culture is that everybody knew that if they found a better way to do it, because it was such a new industry, mail order, let's try it and test it and do it, and away we go.
Do you remember any moments where those decisions were, like, I guess, difficult or questionable in a sense, you know, like as you're navigating all of that, you know, new terrain?
My decisions are Rick's.
Either.
I'm just kidding. They were always.
Also, if you want to just point fingers decision. At each other, that's totally cool too.
Yeah. Well, we did one software update early on that where the order, the people on the phones or whoever were taking orders, they could put notes to if a kid called up and said, I'm going to state track meet and I got to have these shoes. We could say good luck at state or whatever, or call us back. How did you do? Or whatever the case may be. And sometimes that turned into things with that weren't comfortable because, you know, you could never always tell what somebody was saying to your customers. And you certainly didn't want to break the trust that we had worked hard to build up with them. But it became tricky. But we were the culture people looked out for the company. So we had people in shipping who would read these invoices. And if they were not too good, they felt a little concerned about what was being said, they could send it back and they could rewrite the order and get it out. But
yeah.
So, I mean, that's certainly one instance. Do you remember anything else, Art? I mean, there's tons of them because we're always testing things and how big a shoe should be, or should it be down in the right corner or the upper left corner? And, you know, the whole learning process of how people read and how their eyes track, you know, was all a part of how you design the catalog. And so you're always learning.
That kind of reminds me of I guess probably something that isn't talked about too much, but you know, the customization for athletes was obviously a big deal for East Bay. It you know, even beyond just being like kind of the place people went for it, but you guys provided services that were at the time pretty much unheard of, you know, without having a real connection locally for people. How did that evolve and what did that look like with, you know, even the customization that you did on some of the sneakers throughout the years, you know, like that today is a whole business for every one of these brands that you kind of started, you know, 30 years ago.
Like Rick said, I think we listened to the customers. We listened to every, we weren't, yeah, if you read the book, we had 16 years of college, never took a business course, but we pretty much managed by walking around, they call it. So you go all around and you talk to everybody and you get their ideas and they say, let's do this and we'll try it. The customization, the team colors and that really came, you know, to me with the Dunks and the Jordan, where suddenly shoes were not athletic footwear anymore, but, or equipment, they were a part of an identity. And then that just kept going on till you'd make Dadas where you could, you know, start changing all your colors, and a number of different shoes would start doing that. And but that all came from listening to people and what they wanted, listening to our customers. Just like if you were coaching a team and your team wanted to go white and green this year, okay, well, we'll give her a shot. So, and not going to match our uniforms, but.
And you guys were both coaches at one point, right? If I remember right.
Yes.
So all businesses should just be started by sports coaches from here on out, and we'll all be better off for it, I think. That's the takeaway so far.
Well, we had a lot of fun. We hired a lot of athletes. So like you said, when you went there, we'd go watch hopefully the Packer game. I don't think I saw any San Francisco Giants games on the TVs there, but.
Yeah, I mean, back then it was if you weren't watching a local team, we all just turned to WGN or TBS because we had to watch the Hawks or the Bulls, basically. You know, it was like, yep, the only choices that we had.
Yeah, as we came up, ESPN was just coming. The mid '80s, you'd only get one NBA game a week,
yep,
or baseball, yep, game.
Yeah, so I guess like. I want to circle back to some more Wausau stuff in a second, but I'm thinking about like, as all of that grows and, you know, you guys have this opportunity with Foot Locker, in hindsight, I think knowing that Dick Johnson was able to become the CEO of Foot Locker kind of validates all of the direction, all of the choices. But how did you guys feel going through that process? And what was that like for you to even, you know, I'd imagine you've got decades of working on this, you had to have a lot of emotion wrapped up in the Foot Locker deal.
Oh, that was a tough one. That was, we thought about what we wanted to do, but we also thought about what was best for East Bay. And, you know, and after losing half of your business, because companies won't let you carry such, you know, different types of products. We always had the feeling Nike and some of the companies wanted to go direct themselves. So the internet's coming up. We felt that was the best way to go for East Bay to stay as long as possible. And they did a great job. I mean, they got the NBA teams. NBA.com. They got the NFL.
Yeah.
All those catalogs. And which we tried to do earlier, and they really didn't get anywhere. But once you were Foot Locker, with all that behind you, it became, I think, much, much bigger. And luckily, then Dick Johnson was there to keep it going as long as he could. So,
did you guys stay on for a period of time when all of that happened? And what did that look like for you guys?
We stayed on a few years, and it was a little melancholy because, you know, you're really not calling the shots anymore. You're not spending the money. So that was hard.
Yeah, you probably have similar feelings around the, you know, when it kind of all shuts down in 2022 as well. I would imagine you're revisiting a lot of those feelings from that era to kind of have the. But then, like I was telling Charles before, it's like, but then you got the book, like the book comes and it's like, I feel reinvigorated by this whole thing. Cause I'm getting to talk to you guys where I came in, you know, kind of in the middle of this story. For me, it's early in the story. For you guys, it's, you know,
yep,
3/4 of the way through. And it's such a beautiful thing to see, you know, you guys putting a story out there, the book and all of this kind of energy that people are getting to, you know, relive a little bit of these nostalgic moments for themselves.
Yeah, you only get to go through things like that once, sometimes maybe twice, but there's so many things that we had forgotten because we really did try to move on. I mean, we really did try to get out of the way because there was a lot of talent there, and they deserve to have their own voice, and they deserve to plot their own course. So we really worked hard at staying away and getting out of the business because we were lucky enough to have young kids and they didn't need coaches, but we thought they needed coaches. So we got to coach our kids it worked out really well, but the book became a real, the longer that we spent on it, and it started early on, it really became a big thank you to the people that were there because it was the best job in the whole world. And it was really hard, even though we spent time on some boards and did some volunteer work, you just got such an appreciation of how people bought into the vision. and how much they believed and how hard they worked and how hard they taught themselves and how hard they taught each other and listened and worked together. Nobody would hire us because we aren't really hireable, but we couldn't imagine doing anything else but East Bay because of what it was and the people that worked there.
Yeah, it's such a beautiful thing, and I'm so glad that you guys did it. As I said before we started recording, and even early on, like, you know, it's such a huge part of my personal life, my career, and, you know, I don't even know what this journey looks like without you guys have taken those chances and, you know, in mom's basement, or, you know, I know you had the was it the AMC Gremlin, right? Like, you know, the
first 6 months. Yeah.
Yeah. All that stuff was, you know, probably pretty fun and intimidating at the time, but like it established something so much bigger, you know? And I think one thing that I've been thinking about as the week has gone on, leading up to talking to you guys, when I got up there to Wausau, like probably the third or fourth trip, you had one of your tent sales, and this, I know you guys were removed from the company at that point, but the tent sales seem like an interesting thing that you had done out of necessity to have, you know, you have this excess inventory, you've got probably discounted product and even samples and all the stuff that it's like, hey, this isn't going to be sold through the catalog. You decide to have tent sales. And I can't help but think that that has some sort of connection to the way that sneaker drops evolved over time, right? It's like, there was so much buzz about that on the message boards in the late 90s and early 2000s. And then for me, even in 2009 or 10 or whenever it was that I first kind of got to experience it, like there's just so much product that people, up until that point, you don't really have those massive retail stores where you see hundreds of different shoes or even, you know, even more at times. Was that like, you know, was that something that happened all throughout the years and it was just kind of like brought the community in Wausau out and together to kind of move through that inventory? Or was it just, I guess, like just the business necessity to say, hey, we got to just move some of this stuff?
Well, Rick, you always loved the tent sale. Our early ones, Rick would start bringing brand new stuff out and says, well, you know, we're running out of stuff. I says, yeah, that's a good thing, you know. Go ahead, Rick.
No, you go ahead.
After you.
Well, it just like the book was a thank you to our people at East Bay. The tent sale was a necessity to turn some cash in inventory that was going to be replaced as they started having quicker drops. It was a way to say thank you to the people of Wausau because it. We needed the cash and it was a chance to have them get shoes, you know, because a lot of times you send out a pair of shoes and somebody tries it on and they get it dirty or something. So you can't sell it as new. So we even had Air Jordans in the tent sale because they came back as a return. There was nothing wrong with them. They were just blemished. But yeah, it was a big thank you to the people of Wausau who helped, who allowed us to be a part of the town.
It started as a part of the sidewalk sale in downtown Wausau, and then the last year, I think the line to get in it was over a half mile long, maybe a whole mile, and the mayor and the police chief and fire chief said, you know, you guys can't have it down here anymore, so we had to move it to the ice rinks. So
yeah, it's such a crazy kind of. I would call that the sneaker lore thing. You know, it's one of those things that people talked about, nobody really experienced, but then I would imagine you've probably got a lot of, you know, young kids that bought their first pair of Air Jordans at one of those tent sales and have those memories too, which is really kind of beautiful. And to the other part of that to the community in Wausau, like, what are some of the things that you've done? You know, like, East Bay built football fields and or football stadiums and soccer fields. And I mean, you guys did so much work for sports in and around Wisconsin, but like, you know, probably beyond that from, you know, what I've heard. What are some of those moments or those things that you look back at and think, wow, like really feel really proud about?
I think one of them is we were able to work with the schools with the special needs kids. And they came over and did all kinds of jobs. We were just thrilled that we had enough things that we needed done that those kids could come in and start to get their feet wet. And for a lot of them, it was their first job they ever had. And a lot of them went on to have other jobs, which was just really, it was really heartwarming because you could see them growing. You could see even by starting by pushing a broom, they eventually got to putting the order form on top of the shoe when it came up to the shipping table. And even some of them started shipping. And so it was just so heartwarming to see their growth. And none of them ever played sports, but some of them had a chance of life, and that was a biggie for us. One of them, anyway.
Yeah, that's awesome. All right, kind of shifting back. This will be kind of the last question for you. One thing I've been thinking about, you know, kind of talking about the catalog covers and the athletes, you know, you guys had such, you know, important moments in so many literal Hall of Fame athletes' lives. It feels like to me that it almost kicked off this whole world of sports agency in a way, right? Like, I don't imagine that there was too many sports agents in the 80s in between you guys and, you know, whether that's a Shaq or, you know, whomever else. But then, like, it feels like there's this like reverence for East Bay from so many professional athletes that I would imagine they're kind of like, send the agent on vacation, I'm going to go hang out with the East Bay guys. So I know you've got probably a bunch of memories around that, but like, what is one of the things that stands out the most in terms of the athletes that you connected with over the years?
You talked about it earlier, maybe it was, and you did an article on it in Sneaker History. What was the Shaquille O'Neal?
Yeah.
And you talk about, he went to Nike with all Reebok stuff on, and we had heard that. This was a time we were trying to get Nike back. So when Shaq came out, and then we had heard that he went to Nike and he had above the rim shirts on and that, and they asked, where'd you get it? It was all East Bay. Who else would have my size and things like that? So it really helped Reebok look to us when it came time to do the Shaq shoes. And because we started doing the Shaq shoes and doing big business with it, I think that kind of Nike looked at it and said, you know, because they were really neck and neck at that time, Reebok and Nike. And they says, you know, maybe we should really talk to East Bay again and get back to that. But we had dinner with him and Dominic Wilkins, an all-star game. Such a nice guy. I just remember saying what a nice young person he was. And yeah. We met so many great athletes that way. And it just, we were so fortunate.
All right, last question. Do you have, when I ask you what your favorite catalog was, what catalog comes to mind? Is there a cover that you look back at most fondly, or even a spread or a series of shoes or whatever, that when you think of East Bay, what catalog pops into your head?
The one behind me. Dream
okay,
big,
yep.
Dream off. And if you really look at the cover, it's just a young man shooting hoops by himself. And on the outside, and Rick came up with this, are all these people in the crowd watching him play, even though he thinks he's, you know, like when you're playing basketball by yourself, you always have that feeling like it's the end of the game, you know, down by 1 point and you got the last shot. And that's kind of what it was, that feeling. Rick, yeah, what's yours?
Yeah. For me, it's just the whole collage, just being able to look at the different catalogs and see the different points in time that they represented is really kind of special for me. But the one catalog, and it isn't even that big of a catalog, would be the 1987 All Sports, because that's the first catalog that we put all sports into one catalog. Before, it was just basketball and wrestling. We didn't even have a Christmas catalog. You know, the spring catalog was track and field and baseball. And then there was no running or baseball shoes any other time during the year until we were able to scale out and grow to be a national catalog. But the 87 All Sports catalog is the one that is the first one that we took the chance and listened to the coaches and the athletes and put all the sports in all year long.
Wow. Well, that'll be on a bunch of people's eBay searches in the next week after this show comes out. So, so once again, thank you guys so much for coming on and chatting with me. Bookofeastbay.com. Everybody can go and order. You can download kind of a sample prologue of the book on there too, if you want to see. If you haven't got enough of Art and Rick in this conversation, you can kind of find the angle of the book. But I feel like anybody that's listening or watching to this show, you know, they're right there with us, kind of one of us, kind of, you know, you should just go order it. It'll be linked in the description wherever you're taking this in. And if you guys have any last thoughts before we get out of here, what's on your mind?
Well, the book is everything. All profits go for charity. They go for the Little Warriors Foundation, which is a cancer, childhood cancer foundation. So if you buy one, you're helping out.
Awesome. Yes, definitely.
Well, and thanks, Nick, because you make this real. You do such a good job of bringing it down to real life situations and how you feel and what was it like and blah. And that's such a great learning, not just for this podcast that people are probably falling. If anybody's got insomnia, this would be the one to listen to with Art and I, but
good book too for that.
But all of them, I mean, it's just what you do to help people see other sides of life and see what's out there that makes a difference. Congratulations for what you've been able to do.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that. Definitely. Yeah. And, I'll probably have to follow up with you guys around the holidays because I plan on just sending these to my siblings. So we'll probably have some fights over who's circling what, and you'll have to, you know, mediate the debates that come from it since we're all, you know, nobody else followed me into the sneaker world. I'm the oldest of the siblings and nobody else followed me into the sneaker world, but I know this is going to be one of those things that will be a definite treat for them when we all get together during the holidays.
You're the first one. I've heard so many customers say they got their catalog taken away by teachers. You're the first one where your mom had to take them away. So,
we kind of had an unwritten law that we wouldn't ever cut them up. So we never cut up the catalogs, but we would all circle and we used different color pens at first. And it was, you know, one of us had a red marker that would circle. One of us had a blue and a green and, you know, kind of was, and then it kept just like your guys's business, our, you know, kind of life with the catalogs expanded right along with you in the house. So it was, you know, something I look back very, very fondly at, and to get to talk to you guys has just really been an honor. And I really appreciate you coming on and giving me the time of day.
Well, thanks for what you do too. So this has been a real treat for us. Thanks.
Thank you. All right. Thanks for everybody for listening, watching, tuning in, wherever you're taking this in. Definitely hit the links in the description to grab the book and support this good cause. This is probably, if not the most important sneaker history piece of what we've been doing the last decade or so, if it's very close to the top of it, if not. So thanks again, Rick and Art and Charles, and we'll catch you all on the next episode.
Thanks, Nick.
Thank you, Nick.